This month we only have one meeting, and next month will be the same thing because happened the first Monday of November will be All Souls Day, so we will all be busy having mass in the evening on All Souls Day. So in November there will be only one meeting on November 16th, so that will be our meeting for next month. So the meeting we have will be a bit longer than the other group because I squeeze things into one meeting. So of course on that night, do pray for the Holy Souls on November 2nd. And then of course, do go to Mass if possible on that day, because the Mass is the most powerful prayer for the dead, for the souls. And on that day, you know, priests allow, even though there's no pastoral necessity, every priest allowed to say three masses on November 2nd. So normally we are allowed to say three masses only when there's a pastoral necessity. Like you have to do mass for the different people in the parish, for example. But you know, the three masses given to the faculty, to all priests, to do it on November 2nd, even though there's no pastoral necessity, you can just do three masses. Some priests, they might do it one after another. So when they do it one after another, it's that you, after the post-communion prayer, you don't give a final blessing, you just go right into the entrance antiphon and then the opening prayer. And then you start the second mass that way. And you do the third mass after that. Then what you do is that you don't do the final blessing after the second mass, and then you go right into the entrance antiphon and then another opening prayer. So you can technically do one after another. But of course, also you can do it separately. So remember when I was a young boy, you know, seeing priests doing one mass after another, pretty interesting, you know, seeing the priest doing one mass after another. So we talked about last time about all the difficulties faced by John Bosco, right? He was opposed by the mayor, and so he would not compromise. He would not compromise. So that the mayor sent police. And then when John Bosco preached, he purposely preached about hell and damnation and confession and repentance. And so the police, they make confession. Not only the mayor opposed him, but whenever he went, people complained about the noise of the boys. And then the housekeeper of the priest, you know, who gave him to use the land near the cemetery, was so upset that she was yelling and screaming, and you know, and then the priest wrote a nasty letter to complain John Bosco, but they both died in 1 week, within 1 week actually. So people have fear. They feel that people who oppose to the oratory, they got punished. People who they found by experience when they support the oratory, they find they were being blessed by God. And then not only the neighbor or the people complain, but also people in the church, they thought that John Bosco losing his mind, because he also had prophetic dreams. So he would talk about the future like, oh, there will be a spacious oratory, there will be classroom, there will be workshop, there will be lots of students and lots of priests. So people think he's crazy. So then people also, he expressed the idea of finding a religious order. Oh, he's even more crazy. So at one point, even two priests have the mission to send him to the mental hospital. But John Bosco, you know, would not go into the carriage. You know, he let them went in first, closed the door, and told the driver go to the mental hospital. So when the driver went there, the nurse, you know, confined both priests. They wasn't sure which one was the priest. So they both got confined. But then John Bosco had a difficult time when the landlord had to take back the land that he was using. And so that's really difficult. So when that land had to be taken back, you know, that Palm Sunday, it was really hard. It was a really hard time for St. John Bosco. So it was 1846. So he had to, you know, he really prayed to God. He even shed tears. He felt so alone that everybody abandoned him, and he was looking after all those boys by himself. And then his work seemed to be almost finished. But and then at that time, when he shed tears and prayed to God, that somebody came and asked him, you know, are you looking to for a place for a workshop? And then he said, not a workshop, but an oratory. So they eventually he rented the place, and that place eventually became his own. Eventually he would buy that place in the future. But now he rent that place. And then he got so sick too, that same year in July, he collapsed. He was really sick, and that he was close to death, and everybody praying for him. Everybody. But he himself didn't pray. And so Father Borrow, the priest who helped John Bosco, urged and pleaded with John Bosco, you pray to God yourself. And John Bosco eventually didn't want to hurt Father Borrow. He said the prayer, you know, if it is your will, it is please you, please cure me. And then the priest said, yes, you will be well, you will get well. And then John Bosco fell asleep, and then when he woke up, he was well. And so God answered the prayer of the so many boys, you know, they make promise to God, you know, I will pray 5 decades rosary for the rest of my life every day. You know, I will pray 15 decades of the rosary for the rest of my life. I will fast with bread and water for a year. They make so many promises. And then they rotate to pray for John Bosco for his recovery. So it was really touching. And then John Bosco was so touched. You know, when he went back, they were in tears. They were cheering. And John Bosco said, I owe my life to you because you pray for me. I have dedicated my life to serve you. So really touching. And then because he need to rest, he went home. He went home to rest. But when he went home, you know what? The boys missed him so much. They wrote him letters, you know, please come back, we wait for you. You know, they eventually will make a field trip. They will walk all the way to his native village to visit him. And also the boys, they got jealous. Because in the village, the boys in the village love John Bosco. So there's a rumor he might start an oratory back home, not coming back to Turin anymore. So they got jealous. So they really, no, John Bosco, you come back. But you know what? When John Bosco really go back to Turin, the boy in the village, they were upset. And their mommy also upset. Because they were hoping John Bosco would stay home forever and have an oratory there. So when he left, they were upset. So the boy in turn really, really plead with John Bosco. And John Bosco really want to go back home. But at that time, there was a couple of difficulties. The first difficulty of going home was his friends. His friends say, no, don't go back home. You have to rest at least a year or so. Otherwise, you might relapse. You might get sick again. And so John Bosco, you know, but he was like a heartache for him. You know, he was so painful, not able to see the boys. You know, at first, even the Archbishop and St. Joseph Gavasso didn't want him to go home. But he saw he was so, you know, painful in the heart, they let him go. They say, okay, go, but for the first 2 years, you only among them, you know, you only stay among them. And so you have, you only direct advise them, but no confession, okay? No teaching catechism, huh? No, you know, only among them, direct advise them, okay? And then, okay, I will go, I will do that. So John Bosco was going back. And then soon after, he was working like before. So one day when he was, many years later, he talked about those times, he said, you know, at first, I really intend to obey and to keep my promise. But when I saw that Father Burrow and his assistant could not possibly cope with everything. And that occasionally on Sunday and holy days, many of the boys were unable to go to confession or receive religious instruction. I felt I couldn't stand by idly. So I took up my accustomed activities. And now it is 25 years and more since I have not had any need of doctors and medicine. This makes me believe that well-regulated work does not harm a person's health. So that's his theory. Well-regulated work doesn't harm your health. So if you work well-regulated, it won't harm your health. Huh? Something to learn from. Now, you know, remember I mentioned that the Marchioness, is that called Marchioness? The lady, the wealthy lady, who founded the hospital, you know, she fired John Bosco, remember? Mm-hmm. Because that, you know, John Bosco spilled blood, you know, before his big sickness. The lady told him, take 5,000 lira, you go to rest, don't work anymore, your health is poor. But John Bosco said, no, I cannot, I have to work. He's stubborn. And so you fire, you know, because he has to choose between either to continue as a chaplain or to give up the boys, you know, whatever, you know, to work for the boys. And John Bosco say, you got the money, you can hire any priest you want, the boys only got me, you know. So he cannot go back anymore because he is not the chaplain of St. Philomena Hospital anymore. Yeah. I think I told you that lady who was wealthy, you know, I say sometimes the saints don't understand one another, even the saints, because that lady, her case for, she already got the decree of heroic virtue this year. She is now venerable. So even though she and John Bosco have some disagreement, they both can become saints one day, you know. So I think saints don't fight in heaven though. So, okay, so, anyhow. She told John Bosco to take away all his stuff and he have go to the village to rest, you know, to say, you are not coming back for a while, take away all your stuff. So Father Borrow had to take away all the stuff from John Bosco, so she hired another chaplain. So nowhere to stay. So the problem was, he already rent some rooms in the house close by the oratory. But that neighborhood is not good for a priest living by himself because, you know, some really ill-repute women were close by, you know. And then also they have some a place, you know, like a bar, you know, those kind of places. So John Bosco feel that he need to have someone that can move in with him, that can also protect his good name. And so he was thinking, who can I get? And then he asked the parish priest, and the parish priest say, you got a mother, right? Ask your mother to go with you. And then he thought about, mother, yes, I'm not surprised about that, but and the priest didn't even let him say, you know, but you know, your mother will be a good guardian angel for you. He thought about, mommy is old. For him, old means 58, okay? So he was 31 years old, and mother was 27 years older. So for him, 58 is old already at that time. So mother is old, you know, she should enjoy at home. Now have to go all the way to Turin, you know, she feel bad about that. And also to be the housekeeper, that means she will be my, you know, my subject. You know, I always obey mommy. Now mommy have to listen to me. Not good. But he couldn't think about any other solution. So one day, he asked mommy, you know, he said, mama, why don't you come with and stay with me for some time? I rent 3 rooms, and soon I may give shelter to some abandoned boys. You see, he got some idea of a new project already. He wants to have a shelter, a boarding school, that in his mind already. You once told me that if ever I became rich, you would never enter my house. Look at me now, I'm a poor man, full of debt. It is risky for a priest to live alone in that place. So Mama Margaret, you know, was really shocked with that request. So she was in deep thought and thinking about what should I do. But eventually she said, if you think it is God's will, I will come. So the gospel was happy, say, we are going after all things faith. So that year on November 1st is All Saints, 2nd is also November 3rd. They were on their way back. You know, no money. What did they do? They walk all the way back to Turin. Pretty hard journey. No money. And then when they went into the house, it was such a simple room. So few furniture. And Margaret even joked about that, you know, when I was in that form, I'm so busy. When I got up now, I'm much more relaxed. So few things to do here. So, and then the mummy and the son, they were singing, you know, and the mummy cooked some food. John Bosco put up the crucifix, picture of Our Lady, the Our Lady picture, beautiful. And then the boys heard the singing. So the coming back of Don Bosco, the news spread like wildfire. And eventually they have a welcoming party for John Bosco. You know, for Margaret, yes, it was a big sacrifice. You know, when he came back to the oratory, the oratory went back to normal. But also, think about that now, he's no longer the chaplain of the hospital. Only external income.
Mm-hmm.
You know how to do the math, right?
Mm-hmm.
Only expense, no income.
Mm-hmm.
That means the money only get decreased, not increased. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
So they need money. So the Bosco really, really believe in providence, but he also know that you just don't just sit idly and wait for miracles to happen. You do your best, and then God will supply. So he need to do his best. He knew that. So Margaret and Don Bosco, they got some land and vine yard in the country. So they sold those property to get money so that they can run the oratory for boys. And Margaret asked for her dowry that she kept for many years to send to Turin. And then she opened those, and then jewelry, she sold them to have money for the oratory, for the boys. And then for the clothing, for the cloth, she changed that into vestment, into surplus, into elf, into outer cloth, so for worship. So, and you know, when she looking at her treasure for the last time, she felt a bit, you know, didn't want to let go. But when then she realized that, she thought to herself, come on, come now, what better use could they possibly have than to providing food and clothing for poor boys and honoring the heavenly bridegroom in the church. So and then she felt happy to let go. He said, even she got way more stuff, she'll be happy to let them go. So she was a really heroic woman, huh? Really heroic woman. And she already also venerable now, so she might also be canonized one day. And just jump ahead, you know, I would have the story in the future too, but just jump ahead, you know, Margaret, one thing that also I find is a bit unforgettable is that, you know, boys are boys, huh? You know boys. Yeah, boys are boys, huh? So Margaret, you know, find that it's hard to look after them, you know. She fixed their clothing, and then the evening they are torn again, you know. They you know, she put out the clothing, and then they make a mess of that, and then, you know, they are running, they are fighting a war game, you know. They trample on her garden, all the thing destroyed, and so after incident like that, you know, she told John Bosco, let me go home, I can't take it anymore. And then Don Bosco, you know, in those times didn't know, you know, no word can console her. So Don Bosco pointing at the crucifix at the wall. And then Margaret looked at the crucifix with tears in her eyes and said, you're right. Okay, then she's looking again, no more complaint from that time on. And then, so that one thing I cannot forget either. It was so touching. And then after she died, you know, John Bosco saw Margaret in a dream, and then he asked about Margaret, where you are? And then she said, after a while in purgatory, I'm in heaven now. And then at the end of June, she actually tried to give a faint idea what heaven is like, just a little bit of idea, you know. Because when John Bosco asked him, what is heaven like? He said, I don't know how to tell you. So, but give you just a little bit of idea. So she sing a beautiful hymn. It's so beautiful, you know. Nothing on earth can compare with that heavenly music that Margaret was singing in that dream of John Bosco. So anyhow, that jump ahead of the story. So she was a really holy woman. As the conversation of John Bosco and Margaret already indicate, that he have the dream, he got a dream already, that he want to start another branch of work. He already got the work, which is busy already, is the oratory, right? They come on Sunday, they also have night school during the week, and he visit the boys during the day, you know. So it's busy already, the oratory is big, it's getting bigger and bigger. And then now he got another dream, is that he want to open a shelter for boys to stay. The thing about a shelter is no small business. If the boys are living with you, you have to provide food for them, mm-hmm. you have to cook for them, mm-hmm. you have to get them sleep, you have to discipline them. It's almost like in a family. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, it's no easy business. When I look at when I read the biography in details, you know, what is how a day-to-day thing run and how Margaret had to manage the boys also, you know, oh, boys are boys. They are not easy to manage. So, but he got that dream, you know, ah, John Bosco, you know, you got that dream. Huh, I don't even dare to dream about to open a shelter for boys and be the head of that shelter. So, and so Don Bosco actually got the corner, you know, upstairs with hay, you know, with some blankets and stuff ready. He wanted to have the shelter in the future. So one day he was, you know, I think it's easier for me to translate things from Chinese than to read from an English book, you know. I think I'm faster in doing Chinese. So let me just there's a story, you know, how the failure, you know. So one day it was 1847, the year after he came back from his sickness. It's April, an evening. He was going back home, and there were 20 really tough-looking young men. And then when they saw John Bosco, They use foul language, they insult the priesthood, they just say nasty thing. John Bosco pretended he didn't hear anything, and then he asked them, you know, good evening, how are you doing? And then they say, not too well, we are thirsty, no money, can you give us some drink? And then the others say, yeah, we are thirsty. You give us some drink, otherwise don't think you can get out of here. And so they surround John Bosco. And then John Bosco see, you know, it's hard to get out of here. So he say, that's no problem, but you have so many of you, I will get 2 bottles of wine. And then, but I want to drink with you, you know, wine, you know, Lisa like wine. 2 bottles of wine, I want to drink with you. And then they say, okay, of course, no problem. And so, Father, you are so good. How I wish all the priests are like you. So they went to the bar. You could imagine, you know, when John Bosco with 20 tough-looking men, a priest in a bar, you know, people when they saw him, you know, it's quite something to behold, you know. But and then when John Bosco identified himself and told them what he's coming for, they all, okay, yes, welcome, Father. So John Bosco ordered 2 bottles of wine and they were drinking. And then now when they become friendly, John Bosco say, I have a favor to ask you. I hope you won't reject that. And then they say, not only one, even 10. We will do it. You know, we are friends now. And then John Bosco say, okay, can you please don't blaspheme, you know? And then say, yeah, Father, you are right. But you know, it's a habit, you know. So sometimes we just say without realizing it, but we will be careful in the future. Really well. So it's late now. It's time to go home. Next Sunday, come to the oratory. Go home? We cannot do it. We don't have home. Where can we go? And so John Bosco asked, so where do you sleep every night? Oh, no regular place, you know, in the hallway, you know, under the stair, oh, on the street. And then he was touched, you know, oh, poor boys have no home. Okay, so those who have home can go, but those who have no home can come with me. So some of the young people, they went home, and about 10-ish, you know, they went with John Bosco to his place. So he brought him to the corner, you know, and then give them blanket, you know, and say a few words to them. And then he thought it would be the beginning of the oratory, of the shelter. But no, it's not time yet. It was a complete failure. The next morning, you know, he wake up, he want to, help them to get up. But he went up there. They were all gone already and stole the blanket and stuff they took away. They just ran away with the stuff. So it was a failure. He tried another time, also same thing happened. You know, people came, he invited them, they took stuff away, they went away. But it was a failure. But in May, it was raining And then Margaret and John Bosco were eating. A 15-year-old boy, all wet, came, want to ask for food, ask for shelter. And so Margaret, you know, prepare some food and also have a fire so he can sit and dry himself, and then gave him some soup and bread to eat. And then John Bosco asked him where he lived. He said he's an orphan, came here for work, but only a free layer. And then he used that all, and now there's no money and nobody around. And so John Bosco also asked him, have he received First Communion confirmation? You know, no. And upon confession, he said, when my mother is alive, you know, from time to time. And then, where do you want to go? You know, he said, I don't know. But, you know, have pity on me, it is a corner, let me just stay. And then he cried. And then Margaret also cried. And so John Bosco saw a poor little boy and say, you know, if you are not a thief, I will help you. You know, because he say in the past people stole my stuff. You know, and so he say, you know, don't worry. You know, even though I'm poor, I never steal. And so Margaret also agreed to let him stay. So, and then it was in the kitchen. So Margaret, you know, prepare a place, you know, that for him to sleep in the kitchen. But she also took precaution, you know, she took away all the pot and pan, you know, so that nobody would steal. And so the boy would stay in the kitchen for the night. And then in the evening, before the boy went to bed, Margaret say a few words of encouragement, saying, you know, have to work hard, honor God. And then without realizing it, Margaret just started a custom that is now still in the boarding school of the Salesian Order. It's the evening talk, the Salesian talk, the Salesian good night. Is that quite often in the dormitory, before they go to bed, the priest in charge will give them a little talk. And sometimes it will be a story before they go to bed. And so it was a custom in the Salesian school, especially in the boarding school. So it became a worldwide custom. Later on in June, there was another boy. John Bosco was on the street and he saw a 12-year-old crying. And then John Bosco asked, what happened? And then what happened was that his father already died for some time already. And yesterday his mother died. And so people have to bury her. But then what happened is that when they took away the body, the landlord locked the house because they still owed rent. So that the landlord took the furniture away, locked the house after the body being removed, so he had no home to go and nobody. And so John Bosco welcomed the boy to the shelter, and so that became the second student there. And John Bosco also helped him to find work. And so John Bosco, lots of time when the people came for shelter, and John Bosco also helped the material needs, give them food, but also looking for a job for them, and so they were able to work as well. And so it was eventually, it's also that shelter is also named after St. Francis de Sales. So now he had two things going on. He got the oratory going on, he also got the shelter going on, and the shelter, as I say, is really demanding, because basically, you know, because the boys are living there. So in the morning, he had to give them food. They would come to the mass when John Bosco say mass. They would pray the rosary. They would do morning prayer, and then they went out to work, and then they might come for lunch, and then also back to work again, and then for dinner. And then, so John Bosco have to, and then also there's, you know, boys look like laundry, you know, you have to cook. So John Bosco actually would be actually distributing food, you know, with his own hands. So he was working really hard for the boys. And then also, but the oratory itself is getting bigger and bigger. One estimation was that there was around 800 boys already. So it was getting bigger and bigger. And so it's really difficult. So the boss was saying that when the bees are getting too many, they have to separate and have a new home. And then he mentioned to them that they were so crowded already. They were really crowded. And so because they were so crowded, he said, you know, my dear sons, you know, so he said, you know, every time you play, someone get pushed or knocked down and end up with a bloody nose, you know, in the chapel, you know, packed like sardines, you know, and so we cannot make it bigger by pushing the wall away, but when you push the wall away, the ceiling will fall down on us. So, you know, so we have to really have a second oratory. So when they heard about second oratory, they all cheer, yay! So they enthusiasm. So they want to have an oratory in the south part of the city, and the people from that area can go to that oratory. So he also say that the oratory will call sing a lavish oratory for two reasons. Huh? Because the first one is to provide a model of purity and virtue for the boys. And then the second one is that it's a gesture of appreciation to the archbishop. The bishop have been the one who always support John Bosco. And so the archbishop had that name, huh? A lavish. That's the name of the archbishop. And so they have that name, Aloysius Oratory. And so it was blessed in the year 1847 on December 8th. And then there was the Father Capeno was appointed as the director. Now, at that time in Italy, you know, it was a tough time for the church. Because Italy was trying to unite into a country. And then they also opposed to the Pope, because the Pope was, at that time, he was the head of the papal state. So they wanted to take the land away from the Pope. And so it was a lot of anti-clerical. So John Bosco, subject to insults, you know, and also some other priests and religious, they were persecuted. And people also tried even assassination. So it was really, really a tough time for the church at that time. And also because of, but Don Bosco, he always, at that time when there was political uncertainty, you know, they've been fighting between the liberal and the conservative like we have today. So it was politically, you know, chaotic. And Don Bosco made clear he tried to avoid involved into any political party, and then his emphasis is the loyalty to the Pope first. Mm. But some of his co-workers, they were more maybe more left side of the political, and then so they want to talk about, you know, Italy need to be united, you know, they want to have the flight, you know, the marching, you know, the parade. So I think the most severe ordeal for John Bosco is what happened in the year 1848-1849 was really tough year for John Bosco, and I think it's also one of the most painful experience that he had. So he didn't want people to talk about politics. He wanted to know that the only politics in the oratory should be avoiding sin, practicing the faith, obedient to those in authority. And so, but his co-worker, you know, always want to instill political ideas. And they even, so when they want to do that, Don Bosco really showed his disapproval. He didn't want to talk about politics in the oratory. And so, some of his co-workers, you know, deride him, you know, against him. And so when they talk that way against John Bosco, the boys were curious. Curiosity kills the cat, but also it can kill the soul. Some of the boys, you know, they were curious, and so they went out to those march and parade and demonstration. And then when they came back, they talk about, wow, there's music, you know, there is light, there is, and so the other boys also got influenced. So what happened was that they skipped church service in order to go to parade, to demonstration. And then also there is a decline in the reception of the sacrament because of that. So, and then not enough, you know, so John Bosco is still mainly in the oratory, you know, of St. Francis de Sales. But two priests from the second oratory of St. Aloysius demand John Bosco to give them permission for the following Sunday with banner, you know, with things, to take part in the public demonstration and parade. And John Bosco denied the permission and explicitly forbade any such participation from the oratory. But the two priests and some other clerical helper, they declare they would oppose John Bosco. They would do it anyway. So the next Sunday, they led the boys from St. Aloysius and went to the public demonstration and celebration. So Don Bosco took action immediately. He asked Father Borrow to look after the oratory of St. Francis de Sales, and then he went to the oratory of St. Aloysius, and then he told, you know, the rector, you know, the one he appointed as director, saying that, you know, that, you know, because his command was not being followed, he said to him, I don't need your service anymore. Basically, he also fired him. And then when the director asked John Bosco, he didn't know what to respond. And then, supposed to be in the evening, it's the director who should be preaching, and John Bosco say, I will preach tonight. So John Bosco preached, he talked about eternal life, and then didn't mention anything happened in the morning. And then after that, after the blessing, the writer asked, so next Sunday, who will be preaching? And then he said, I will preach. So John Bosco basically really firm. Now, John Bosco was so firm, so those who were against the clerical who were against him were really unhappy. We would get even with him. So the next Sunday, at 2 o'clock, around 2 o'clock, you know, those who opposed to John Bosco, they have their banner, they have their Italian flag, they went to St. Francis de Sales Oratory. So the one who took the flag is a priest, you know. So he saw there was a young man in the oratory reading a Catholic newspaper, which is, you know, a bit against the left-wing political party. So, Catholic newspaper. So, and then so the priest say, shame, you know, why you're reading something like that? So he took the paper from the boy, tore it to pieces, threw it on the ground, spat on the paper, stabbed on it, you know. And then after that, he went to John Bosco and take out a liberal paper, you know, a political paper, and say, this is a good newspaper. Every good citizen has to read this paper. Don't read the other one. And then Don Bosco saw the priest so public saying something like that, was shocked, and didn't want to make a scene before the other boys. Say, okay, why don't we just talk about that in private? But the priest say, no, there's nothing secret. We have to open it, discuss. And then suddenly at that point the bell rang, and so the people go to the church, and by chance. It was the rotation that priest supposed to preach. So when he went up to the pulpit, almost half an hour, talking about liberty, liberation, independence. And so all the boys, some of them, they were really, they'd get bored, you know, and some of them, they laugh. But the ones who most painful is John Bosco. You know, he say, you know, he thought about, you know, this time the devil really got the upper hand. And then she prayed to God, you know, to get away from the boy, those kind of nonsense idea. And then after the ceremony, Don Bosco wanted to talk to that priest, but no chance. The priest left the church and then intoned, you know, some kind of political song, and then marched with the boy, around 100 of them, with the flight. And then they declare, you know, we are not coming back to the oratory anymore unless John Bosco invite us back. And then with banner, with things like that. But Don Bosco would not compromise a little bit, because he knew that now he had to make a really serious decision. He didn't want the oracle to get involved in politics. So what he did was that he wrote notes to all those who opposed him, thanked them for their service, but say, your service are needed no more, and you don't even step into the oratory. So he fired them all. So at that time, when they got fired, they were really upset. So they decided they will alienate the boys from John Bosco. So they would wait for the boys on the street, on the workplace, visit them, and told them not to go to the oratory. So for a few Sundays, the oratory of St. Clement itself, originally is around 500 boys, only 30 to 40 boys came. And then also, because a lot of the helpers left John Bosco, and some other, you know, for one reason or another, they also left. And those who want to stay, they stay by necessity, because they need something from John Bosco, so they just stay. So he was like single-handed, had to look after the oratory all by himself. So it was a really difficult time. So Don Bosco, you know, he was firm on his principle, but eventually the boys, they came back one by one, especially the younger one. Unfortunately, the older one, they left, they never came back, and basically a lot of them have a bad end. They end up not well. And then of his helper, a lot of them, he never saw them again, but some of them, they repent, they came back. And then when they came back, Don Bosco always give them a warm welcome and then restore to their former position. But of course, that year, you know, 1848 was a really, really difficult year for Don Bosco because of the internal division of the oratory. And of course, the oratory eventually do increase bit by bit and then even exceed the original number. So it was eventually back to normal. And at that time, it was difficult. So anyhow, my article only up to that point. So I have to write another new article this week. So I will continue to write, and then next time when we get together, we will continue. But I think that's pretty much, you know, about some of the difficulty of John Bosco in starting the oratory. I think after that, a lot of the things become more, you know, gradually just continue to grow the oratory, more stable, later on more stable. I think later on the difficulty of Don Bosco is more from the outside, because eventually when he, he have school, right, boarding school or day school, and he have two branches of school. You know, the world will continue to develop. You know, he have a school more of academic, to learn, read and write, you know, different things, and also to foster vocation. And then the other kind of school will be more like for technical school, to learn a life skill. Huh? And also because he find that the workplace is really good, really bad in moral for the young boys. And so eventually also for the technical school, he start his own workshop. People can work there. And also printing press. And so he make use of the printing press to spread Catholic teaching. And that upset some people who anti-Catholic. So people want to kill him a few times, you know, and so that was some really dramatic things. We can talk about that, you know, about the time to try to kill John Bosco. And then there was a mysterious dog, you know, the doggy protect John Bosco. He was mysterious. And so some people they speculate it might be actually not a dog at all. It might be actually his guardian angel.
Yeah.
Because that dog, you know, because one of the stories that made me even think that way is that even after years, one time John Bosco missed his dog, and he thought about that dog, and the dog came. And then I do some math, you know, add up all the years. Ordinary dog cannot live that long, you know. It's out of the ordinary. So I think it's something more than just a little dog, you know. It's something sometimes mysterious, that dog that protected John Bosco when he almost got killed. That the dog protected him.